Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the January 17th, 2017 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. A couple of items. If you have cell phones or other electronic devices, please silent them so that we don't interrupt the meeting. That goes for legislators as well. And if we should have an emergency, we have an exit to the my right at the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. And if there's a fire, please don't use the elevator. To start our meeting tonight, would you please stand while we pledge allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Peter's here.
Mr. Stein?
Peter?
Mr. Stein?
I didn't hear. Oh, I'm sorry. Here, yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chak?
Kung Yu Ni. That's Laotian for here.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein? Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present?
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Tonight we have an honor, and that is that we're going to have a new poet laureate for our county. And I think John Spence is going to introduce tonight. John, would you take the microphone at the podium, please, and tell us about our new poet laureate.
Well, I think some basic information has been handed out, yes. But I will say that art is integral to the human experience. It's at the very heart of our worship and our prayer. It's at the basis of our education and our entertainment. Art is a vehicle for self-expression and self-discovery. And in this town, it's a significant economic engine. There's one person that I can think of that has probably been involved with art on all of those levels. And I am pleased and proud to introduce you to the Community Art Partnership's recommendation for Poet Laureate Zee Zahava.
Can you hear me? Hear me? Thank you, county representatives, for confirming my nomination as the 2017 Poet Laureate. It is an honor to serve as an ambassador and advocate for the written and spoken word in our county. Thank you, John Spence, from the Community Arts Partnership. Thank you to the people who nominated me and to the people who write with me. Thank you most of all to Martha Blue Waters. I thank you for every single thing. I have many hopes and plans for the coming year. I look forward to the opportunity to connect with people through workshops and group readings and by working together on collective literary projects. I'm anticipating collaborations that will take place between writers, visual artists, and musicians. And thinking of the many different venues where events can happen, public schools, public libraries, art galleries, bookstores, cafes, coffee shops, retail stores. Elsa Gidlow, the activist poet, said, We consider the artist a special sort of person, but it is more likely that each of us is a special sort of artist. One of my intentions for the coming year is to encourage people to become more familiar with their own unique way of being a writer. This is a time for us to be open to possibilities, to embrace the many ways we can respond creatively to our world, to recognize magic when it shows up, and to welcome it. I would like to share a poem with you that I wrote. It's called Coming to Ithaca. The first drive from the Bronx to Ithaca took 9 hours. Dad was a nervous driver, stopped at every gas station and scenic overlook. He needed to stretch, smoke, pee, worry. What he worried about was me, his oldest daughter, leaving home. He never heard of the place, insisted on calling it that Ishtaka. Mile after mile, hour after hour, he fretted and fumed. Every time he saw a peace sign on a bumper sticker, he said, "Damn it." I was crammed into the back seat of the green Dodge Dart, surrounded by suitcases, typewriter, stereo, my guitar. I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. My father's fear and anger took up so much space. My mother, sitting beside him, kept turning around to look at me, her eyes asking, "Honey, are you all right?" My eyes asking, "Will we ever get there?" At last we got there. We found Quarry Dorm. My father couldn't believe it. "Where is the college? Who do I have to see to get you into a real dorm?" I loved it at first sight, an outpost refuge far from the campus. I said, "This is perfect for me, Daddy." Mom said, "This is perfect for her, Morty." My room was large. There was a window. And outside the window, there was a tree. A tree. It felt like I was in paradise. Mom went down the hall to the bathroom. When she returned, she was beaming. "There are 6 stalls, she said. You will never have to wait." My parents sat on my bed watching me unpack. We were waiting for my roommate to arrive. She was coming from Winnetka, Illinois. My father didn't like the sound of that. "Oh, Morty," Mom sighed. "The girl can't help it. She didn't ask to be born in the Midwest, you know." Inside my head, a silent chant. "Leave, leave, leave, leave. Please, will you just leave?" Finally, they did. They left. And I stayed. That was September 1968. I am still here.
Z, that was absolutely terrific. Thank you for coming and sharing that with us. We look forward to your efforts over the next year. And please come back and read us poems from time to time. We'd like that.
Can I?
Carol.
Okay, I'm going to ask my standard question. First of all, we are classmates, and my parents' car was right next to yours at the same pace on the road. I can't see where you are. There. Okay, sorry. I can't see that far away with quite the clarity that I'd like. I'm going to ask our standard question. In addition to the very big bucks we pay you for doing this, I would like to give you the opportunity to let us know with a mic, so that other people at home can hear it, where we might be able to read more of your poetry or buy your books or find a website or wherever we could support you, as well as you're going to support us and all our constituents.
That's a lovely thing to ask. I appreciate that. I maintain a blog, and this is the address, zzahava.blogspot.com. It's Z-E-E-Z-A-H-A-V-A.blogspot.com. Com. I put my stories there and my poems, and I put news about things that are happening. So thank you so much for asking.
Thank you for sharing. That was a wonderful, wonderful poem.
And John Spence, thank you for all the work that your organization did to find us a wonderful new poet laureate. It means a lot to our county and the residents of our county. I'd like to point out, before she leaves, our former chair of the Tompkins County Board of Representatives, who is here tonight, Barbara Mink. And I also see former town supervisor Herb Engman in the audience. So, Barbara, say hello.
Hello, everyone. I miss you, those of you I know.
Well, we are going to have executive session tonight. We will have two of them. Both of them have to do with a personnel matter with particular people involved. One of them is scheduled for 8 o'clock, so the other one we hope to have before that. Let's move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that any person from the public has to speak to us. If you'd like to speak to us, please fill out one of these blue cards at the back of the room. By filling out the blue card, you're agreeing to our rules. You are our guest. I want to point out a time clock to my left on the wall, and that counts down 3 minutes. By signing this card, you're agreeing to the three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. And you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. I have one blue card at this point. Again, if you'd like to speak, please pass one up. I have Deborah Dawson. Please tell us your community.
My community is the Village of Lansing. And lest you be getting tired of hearing from me, this wasn't my idea. Martha asked me to make a remark tonight about the ACA. Martin Luther King said something to the effect that of all the forms of inequality, unequal access to health care is the most shocking and the most inhumane. Try to imagine the decisions you would have to make and the hardships you would face if you did not have health insurance. Living without health insurance in 21st century America is truly a cruel and inhumane situation in which to find yourself in, and it's inexcusable. And yet, our leaders are willing, indeed eager, to consign tens of millions of people to the hardships of living without health care by repealing the ACA. Now, if the moral appeal in defense of the ACA does not move you, I've had occasion in the last couple of weeks to research what the practical effects of ACA repeal would be. The first place we would feel it is in Medicaid coverage and Medicaid reimbursement. 7.5% approximately of the residents of our county would lose their Medicaid expansion coverage. And we as a county would lose over $1 million in federal reimbursement for our mandated Medicaid expenditures. That is close to 10% of our mandated Medicaid expenditures. And that $1 million is about 5% of all the federal reimbursement we receive for all the programs that we cover in our county. That $1 million could raise our sales tax or our property tax by 2%. So for both of these reasons, the moral reason and the practical reason, I urge you that if and when the opportunity presents itself for you to pass a resolution in support of the ACA and against repeal, that you vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the only blue card I have. Someone else came in. Did you want to speak on privilege of the floor, ma'am? Yes, did you want to speak on privilege of the floor? Okay. All right, then that's all the public privilege of the floor we have. Let's go to municipal officials. I see Duxon Newton from the city council here. Time's up.
Happy New Year. So one update is I've been reassigned to the city administration committee. And so that means George and I are both on that committee, and I'm going to keep abreast of things in the planning committee, but we won't be on the front lines as I used to be. But, you know, we'll continue to give you updates from there. And that came from a concern that some residents of the Third Ward, which includes College Town and Bill Sherman, that they weren't represented on the planning committee, even though they see a lot of construction on their borders. So anyway, so the mayor gave his State of the City address, as he does every January. If you want details, you're probably better off going to reading one of the many media articles or going to his Facebook post where he posted his transcript. But he talked about our investment in infrastructure, changing the zoning to make it easier to construct housing, 7,200 linear feet of sidewalk built since the new sidewalk plan went into place, presenting the drug policy, a new water treatment plant, which is now fully online, providing 100% of the city's water. Then he went a little national politics to talk about the hostility to immigrants that the city of Ithaca wants to, you know, take a stand on. And so he reasserted our commitment to being a sanctuary city. And this week in city administration, we will consider, one, restating that commitment so that we will not cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement unless, of course, you know, it's for a very specific criminal that's known. But we will not generally cooperate with them to identify undocumented immigrants. And another resolution asking the state of New York to issue driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, or not to discriminate, I should say. He also mentioned something he's working on with City Attorney Ari Levine called the New Federalism Project to find out ways that municipalities can resist Trump administration overreach in this kind of new era, I guess. We did pass the INHS pilot that George talked to you a couple times about. And last week, the Planning and Economic Development Committee talked about allowing dogs in Stewart Park. So if you have a strong opinion about that, that will come back to them next month. And I think that's it. Thanks.
Any questions? Martha Robertson.
Hi, Doug. Allowing what in Stewart Park?
Dogs.
Oh, dogs. Okay. Has there been any discussion at the city about the drug policy office or the drug task, whatever? I mean, there was, I think the proposal a year ago was for an office about the drug policy.
I don't think so. So the mayor is assembling a committee to execute his drug plan, but I am not aware of whether that committee has been identified, the members of which have been identified or even approached. So I don't actually know the status of that, but I'll check up with them on that.
Okay, if you can send back a comment that we would like to be involved in that, and as our county departments are very involved in most of those issues.
He specifically lamented that the legislature was not involved in the writing of the plan, and I expect that he will ensure that someone from the legislature will be on the committee.
Great, thanks.
Anna Kellis.
Just actually to Martha, I reached out to Svante, and his response was that he's assembling a task force as from the original committee, and it would be a subgroup of that original committee, of which I don't think there was a legislator on that committee at that time, unless I'm mistaken. So that's something to pursue for sure. I just wanted to share that that's an update.
I'll pass along the word that it would be wise of him to include a legislator.
I'm not sure a legislator or some of the relevant department heads or, I mean, some kind of county presences.
So I thought county staff was on the original, at least one of the multiple committees that...
I think off and on.
Okay.
Carol, then Peter.
Hi, thanks for coming, Doc. Can you say anything more about the... maybe I just didn't hear all of it, but if there's more you can add about the mayor's approach to non-cooperation, except in, you said something about specific circumstances with federal...
The resolution has details, but
okay.
It's along the lines of if there is a specific, say, suspect that is wanted...
That's named
by
the federal government, okay.
ICE, then we would, of course, cooperate, but... As a general rule, IPD and city staff will not be identifying undocumented immigrants to report to ICE.
Identify going out and looking for.
That's right.
Okay. And when is the resolution coming?
So it comes to city administration tomorrow as the standing committee, and once anticipated we'll get out of committee, it'll come to next month's common council meeting, first Wednesday of February.
So it would be, I think I'd like to see a copy of it.
Sure. It's in the agenda, but I can email it to you.
That'd be great. Thank you. And maybe other people would want to see it too. Thanks.
Sure.
Peter Stein?
I just wanted to remind everyone that Gwen Wilkinson, she was not on the legislature, but she was certainly part of the legislative operation, was from the beginning a member of that mayor's task force.
Thank you. Dutson, thank you very much for
thank you
and reporting to us. Am I missing any other municipal official? I just want to let the audience know we're going to go ahead with legislator privilege of the floor, and after that I'm going to move up the charter resolution because there are some folks in the audience here for that. So let's go to privilege of the floor for legislators. We'll be talking about a resolution later to limit ourselves to 3 minutes. Let's keep that in mind. Let's put it that way. Who'd like to speak? Jim Dennis.
I'm not being cynical. And I came to the meeting and had a conversation with Rich about national health insurance. And on the way here, and I looked it up on my phone, that... President-elect Trump has said recently, within the last 24 hours, that there should be universal health care. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he and the people, that seems to fly in the face of Paul Ryan and the people in the House of Representatives. So, and President Obama, who's still the president, has said that, which I think is an amazingly smart statement, if anyone comes up with a plan equal to his and cheaper, he would be the first one to go out and campaign for it. And I think that was a great comment. And my question is, being a nickel-dime county legislator on a budget committee, how do you pay for universal health care? And I think that's got to be a question that has to be answered, and it's not going to be answered in 1 month or 2 months. So that's my comment for the day.
Martha Robertson?
I will pile on this topic. I went to a very impressive presentation on Sunday with from the Tompkins County organized by the Tompkins County Democratic Committee and Tompkins County Progressives, and Deborah Dawson was one of the speakers, and I will just read a couple of... I just want to say a couple of things. There was a poll recently that said that half of Americans did not know that the Affordable Care Act increased the number of people with insurance. 30 million, some people said 20 million, some people 30 million, at least 20 million people have health insurance who didn't have it before. 20 million people have health insurance now who didn't have it before. Now, even if you're not one of those, even if you have kept your employer insurance, et cetera, every single one of us has benefited by things such as our children who can stay on policies until age 26. You can't get kicked off because you've exceeded the lifetime cap. You can't get denied insurance because you have a pre-existing condition. And women, preventive care is covered. Like, and these things affect Medicare as well. So you think, oh, well, I had Medicare before. It's all the same. Not, no. You now have preventive care covered 100% on Medicare, things like colonoscopies, mammograms, basic vaccinations for seniors, the closing of the donut hole, the drug plan, which had cost seniors thousands of dollars before the Affordable Care Act was put in place, that has every year been shrinking, so that by, I think it's 2020, that donut hole is supposed to be closed entirely. These are benefits that we all have seen and all realize because of the intricate and interwoven system that is the Affordable Care Act. And if you say, well, we want to keep the things we like but not the things we don't, it doesn't work. You have to have as big a pool as possible of healthy people, including healthy people, to pay for the people who need a lot of health care. If Donald Trump wants to, absolutely include everybody in a real plan, not just a tax, not just, for example, a savings account. Health savings account, maybe you could put aside $5,000 or $10,000 tax, avoiding taxes, but if that's all you have to pay for your and your family's health care for a year, that doesn't touch it. So if there's a real plan that actually covers everybody, I'll sign on too. This is something where Americans have to understand. This is not just about those people. It's not just about somebody else, like poor people who are getting Medicaid now who couldn't get it before. And, maybe we don't care about those people so much. This is about every single one of us realizing benefits that would not exist were not for the interwoven system that the ACA represents. And I just hope people will call our senators and congresspeople. Congressman Tom Reed's number, his Corning office, is 607-654-7566. His Washington office is 202-225-3161. And let them know how you feel. Thanks.
Michael Sigler.
I'll be quick. I wasn't going to say anything. But this debate's really interesting, because it is. How to put this? I'm not going to tell people how to do their business on how to negotiate something. It's pretty clear to me, though, that the ACA is going away. Too many promises were made that this thing is going away for politically this not to go. My suggestion would be, and again, take this for what it's worth. What do I know? As Peter would often say, I'm not an economist. However, it would seem to me that if that many people are going to lose insurance, most of those people are insured under Medicaid, about 17 million of them, maybe the argument, instead of saying, we are going to fight to keep the ACA, maybe the argument is, hey, we should fight to keep the expansion in Medicaid there, because all these people are going to be out. Or maybe the argument is, you keep this part. I don't really know. But I'm just thinking that the framing of the argument of, we've got to keep the ACA, I don't know, maybe you can turn some people. But a lot of the people that are voting against it right now got elected because they said, we're getting rid of this. And whether you agree with that or not in New York State, there's a lot of states where it hasn't really worked out all that great. New York State, it has. We have a lot more people. We get a lot more federal funding than some of these other states because we already had a great Medicaid not great Medicaid program. That's probably not the right phraseology, but a very generous Medicaid program compared to other states. So, yeah, our Medicaid's expensive in this state. So, yes, we get a lot of federal money because our Medicaid's expensive in this state. But in other states, it hasn't worked out so well. And we are a nation of 50 states. And I would just keep that in mind, that sometimes you got to take a step back and say, what do we like about this that we want to keep? And maybe that's the argument that should be made, is this is what we want, you know. And I don't know. Hey, Donald Trump saying universal health coverage, I would like to see. I don't know how that's going to happen. But then again, you know, it's interesting to hear people talking about deficits, because I frankly didn't think deficits mattered anymore, but now apparently they are all the rage. So I don't, what do I know? But that's what I'm looking at, is that the discussion is certainly anew in this week. So thank you.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just sent an email to Kathy to distribute. A constituent of mine, Ann Sullivan, forwarded me talking points that were distributed at that meeting. I thought you might want to hear them. I think we'll be hearing more from this group over the next month or a few weeks, or longer. But just a couple of highlights. I'll let you all get the email and read them. But highlights from there is that I noticed about 8,000 people in Tompkins County would lose their coverage. And the budget implication for us here in Tompkins County from those people who would, of those people, the ones who will then become eligible again for Medicaid, would give us $1 million budget impact. So if for no other reason, look at this set of their talking points and maybe some of the links that they left, and maybe come with more questions, because they will probably be here talking to us in the future.
Peter Stein.
I spent quite a long time today actually reading some articles in a magazine that I subscribe to about health care, and it reminded me of the first time when I first learned what quantum mechanics was. You've all heard about quantum mechanics. It's the basis of modern physics. And it's very simple. It's not complicated at all as a student. I mean, it's very simple. So the equations aren't very big, but it's crazy. It just doesn't make any sense. When you sit and look at it, it seems completely contradictory within itself. And if you sit and try to think about, well, why exactly does this happen? You come across arguments that make it possible and arguments that don't make it possible. And I really didn't get a handle on it for 2 years. I mean, it does. It turns out it's beautiful. It's very subtle. But
are you talking about physics or the ACA?
What?
Are you talking now about
quantum mechanics?
Physics?
I'm talking
quantum
about.
Quantum mechanics. Okay.
Okay. So I've come to find that healthcare is the same thing. It's basically very simple. I mean, what is it? Universal health care. Everybody ought to have medical service. What could be simpler than that, okay? And but by the whole this complicated thing about the this particular thing and Obamacare, should it be Obamacare? Should it be this? Should it be that? And I was reading these articles, and honest to God, I tried really hard to understand it. I couldn't understand what they were saying. For instance, you say, well, somebody just said 20 million people have health insurance that didn't have it before. That's tremendous. Of course, the other side of that is it's not tremendous at all, because there are 300 million Americans, okay? So it's a very small part of the country that got that. So that the people that got that weren't very many of them. And the rest of the people had health care before and health care afterwards. So the majority of the people can't believe that that was very important, because there weren't very many people that got it. I think that if we're saying we have to go back to Obamacare, I'm not at all convinced of that. I read one article written by somebody who I respect, the New York Times editorial writer. I'm sorry, I can never remember names. The Republican.
David Brooks.
David Brooks. David Brooks has this big article in there. He's not a stupid man. He had an article saying that it's very simple. It's going to be wonderful what Obama is doing, because it's going to everybody knows in capitalism that that competition drives down prices, and it goes to everyone's benefit. And he believes that. He believes that what he's doing is exactly the right thing to do. In the same way that, you know, Walmart had its problems, but it made buying for people of all classes very much simpler now. So I don't think you could predict with any sense as to what, at least I know I am not comfortable with any kind of a prediction that says what's going to go happening in this very complicated system. But I think the way we ought to look at it is what exactly is it we want? And whatever the system is, we can't bitch about what the system is as long as what the system does gives that result that we want. That's the end of my statement, okay? But I don't think we should tie ourselves to what Obama did or what people have done before and to argue about whether competition helps or competition doesn't help. It's too complicated for us of us that don't live in this world. But we know what we want. We want everybody in this country to have decent health care, period, then. That's what we're asking for. And if Trump can do that, I'm for it. That's all I have to say.
Anna Kellis.
Me too. There's a few things that I wanted to add to the conversation. One, very much appreciate that we're talking about it and that everywhere I go we're talking about it, because I teach about the ACA, and it's incredible up to now how little has been known about our healthcare system. So even that, I think, is a plus, and hopefully that will lead to some solutions. And I absolutely applaud Obama saying that he'd be the first in line if there's something actually better out there. Some of the things, though, that I have found, and we talk about Medicaid and Medicaid expansion, and we can't complain because it's really good here. Well, as everybody remembers, that was part of the original to require that Medicaid be expanded, and ended up with a Supreme Court case and ultimately meant that they could choose. And those that didn't choose are the ones where we're not seeing as great a situation, ironically. So that was one point, and hopefully that does get expanded. The other thing that I hear a lot is that universal health care could not ever work in this country. It's unrealistic. But the one thing that I find that people aren't aware of is that Medicare is universal health care for a subpopulation. We have a system here that is technically universal health care. So we have tons of precedent that it can be worked. It would simply need to be expanded for the entire United States. So we have samples. We have experiments that we've been doing for a very long time. The only last thing that I wanted to bring up was about Martin Luther King Day. I wanted to thank GIAC and Leslin for an amazing event this weekend. It was emotional and powerful, and the room was full. There was a tremendous amount of support, so I wanted to thank her for that. And there is an event on the 24th at Cornell, continuing the conversation. This is Continuing the Dream, the Significance of Modern Political Activism and Social Justice, featuring Rosa Clement. She's a graduate, actually, of Cornell, has gone on to do great things. And that is Tuesday, January 24th, from 4 to 6 p.m. in the Multipurpose Room, Africana Studies and Research Center, for anybody who wants to join me.
What I have is Will, Dooley, me, and then Martha and Jim both want another shot.
Thank you, Mike. It's an interesting week. We live in interesting times, and of course, on Friday we will be inaugurating a new president. The day after, however, literally thousands of people will be converging on Washington, D.C., coming from all over the country for a women's march. Though, despite its name, it is not limited to women. It'll be people of both sexes and many different perspectives. Last I heard, we have something like 12 buses going from Ithaca and many, many, many cars. And it's going to be interesting getting into the city. But there will also be a sort of a parallel event around the country in small cities, in towns, whatever, right here in Ithaca. 10 o'clock, starting at City Hall, there will be a Women's March on Ithaca. And that will be attempting to speak to the incoming administration and encouraging it to consider issues for people of color, immigrants, the LGBTQ community, people with disabilities, climate change, and many other concerns. So I will be going to that. One other complete other thing, though. As you may have heard, the Cougar Radio Group, which owns every commercial radio station in our community, is poised to change the format of what has, for the past 11 years, been the progressive radio station in Ithaca. Used to be WTKO. It's now goes by the call letters WNYY. And it's at 1470 on your AM dial. And for the past 11 years, they have been the counterpoint to conservative talk radio, which is on their sister station, WHCU. And they have brought nationally syndicated programs that talk about issues such as health care, and you could tune in at any hour of the day and find interesting discussions. In a case of, I think, impeccably bad timing, the station management has decided to end progressive programming on WNYY and switch it to a golden oldies format as of February 1, which means that if you have been a fan of shows like Tom Hartman or Stephanie Miller or any of the other shows that have been there, you will no longer be able to get them by flipping on your radio. And the station has reasons for doing it. They say that nationally it's getting harder to find these shows, and for some reason there seems to be less interest in producing them. But I would say they are very much interested in hearing from the community. I talked with the station manager, Chet Osachi, had a very good conversation with him. I would encourage other people to go to the website for the Cougar Radio Group. And look them up and give a call or fire them an email if you are concerned about this. I think it's important to our democracy to have diversity of opinion, and especially at this time, I think it's incredibly important to have progressive voices on local radio. Thank you, Mike.
Willie Kiefer.
I agree with you, Will. I am going to comment on the health care that's being discussed. I think we were asked if we might consider passing a resolution, making our position clear. And we have made it clear in the past. We strongly supported single-payer health care, and we could dust that off. Single-payer health care, which is Medicare for all, as Anna referenced, would work in this country, and it would fulfill President Obama's desire to have something better than Obamacare, but it runs smack up against big pharma, big hospitals, and so forth. But I would hope that we would at least go on record once again in favor of that and do it sooner rather than later. Thank you.
I was next, and Carol, you want to come on again?
Yeah, I just wanted to answer Julie's.
You have an answer for a question? Go ahead.
Yeah. So there was a resolution that was going to come tonight. Anna and I have been working on it with the people.
I'm expanding it now.
And they've asked us to wait until next meeting. And they've also asked us to refrain from getting into details of the ideal that we'd like to see. That they would like us to unite around principles that they'll talk to us about in answer to what's being proposed now nationally, rather than try to redesign the best case. So we can talk about that more in between now and next time if you'd like. You may not be able to talk to me because I'm going away. But
they can talk to me, Carol.
So you'll hear more and you'll see the resolution in plenty of time. I think that they were going to get it to us by the 24th, and then it'll be in your packet. I think that comes out the 31st, and there'll be time before our meeting on the 7th for people to talk about. I just hope that
whoever is crafting this resolution for us doesn't forget we have historic positions and they include that, even if it goes against the idea that we aren't supposed to redesign something. Thank you, Mike.
I had me next. Sorry, Leslin had to leave the room, but I wanted to say something nice also about the Martin Luther King Jr. breakfast that I was privileged to attend. I didn't hear the whole program, but what I heard was pretty nice. I loved the children singing for us and dancing for us, and we had the privilege of hearing our own Leslin McBean Claiborne sing for us and lead the whole group in song. And she has a nice voice, and I was pleased that happened. The other thing I wanted to say, Peter, in good fun, Peter, I never thought I'd come on the legislature and hear anything here that we talk about equated to quantum mechanics. But I'm glad for that. But it has to remind me of one thing. I guess I got to tell this quick story. My predecessor, as original predecessor on the legislature, back then the Board of Representatives, was Robert Watrous, who served 20 years and for a time was the chair of the legislature. And when he got off the board, I asked if he had any advice. He said, well, you're going to hear a lot of things. He says, one thing, he says, over 20 years, I've had so many lectures by Cornell professors that I believe Cornell owes me a degree. And I always remember that comment from him. But thank you, Peter, for that. Go back to Martha Robertson.
Thanks very much, Mike. Appreciate it. I just wanted to comment from to Peter and Mike Sigler. The details really matter. Why, you know, it's not just about we want to keep what we have. The issue is there's no plan, and Republicans have had 6 years to come up with a plan, and they apparently can't agree on a plan. And debate is terrific, but when you're taking away something as profoundly fundamental to every American in the system, every American, just kind of saying wiping it clean without any conversation about what would replace it, that's irresponsible. And it needs to be on the table, it needs to be debated, it needs to be, you know, looked at from all different sides. What are the unintended consequences? And that happened with the Affordable Care Act. It needs to happen with whatever replaces the Affordable Care Act. I think a lot of people would, in fact, I've heard that a lot of people who are opposed to the ACA want single payer. That's why they're opposed to what we have now. So I think it's unclear. I think the opposition isn't just we're mad we lost. It's that people are terrified. My sister has MS.
It sounds like we're going to debate this next.
Just a second. If the pre-existing condition thing went away, she'd be out of luck. And her $2,000 a month medication, how would she pay for that? My daughter has lupus. Same thing. You go down the line. Anybody who's gotten to my age, we've all got some kind of pre-existing condition. All right, that's one thing. So it matters what the replacement looks like and who pays for it. And you said deficits don't matter. Really?
Not really what I said.
Okay.
All right. This is privilege of the floor, and you're on your second time, Martha.
One more.
I don't want to get into a back and forth.
Okay. One more sentence, please. The rules that were passed by the House of Representatives in first week of January included a little noticed line that said that the Congressional Budget Office, which is the office that does the straight-up economic analysis of legislation, they were told by, according to these rules, they are not allowed, they are prohibited from reporting on what will be the long-term deficit consequences of repealing ACA.
It was just reported today. CBO came out with a report today. So they must be ignoring that line.
No. All right. Jim Dennis has the floor.
I just read it today in the
it's
paper.
Not the 20th.
Jim Dennis has the floor.
Thank you. My general question is, did anybody get under 3 minutes in any of this?
I was timing.
I hope that's rhetorical.
Yes. Was there a zero on that?
Anyone else before we move on? All right, thank you. At this point, I want to turn to Dooley Kiefer and ask if she would please move her resolution on adopting the charter.
I'd be glad to, Mike. It's Resolution F, Document 6586, Adoption of Local Law Number, probably 1, of 2017, revising the Tompkins County Charter, and I move it.
Seconded by Dan Klein. Remember, we've had now two public hearings. We had an original public hearing. We came back. We made some changes, particularly with respect to the section regarding the selection of a director of mental health. So the one that we're talking about, the charter version we're talking about now, has that change in it. We had a public hearing on it with that change, so now it's here for adoption. Dooley, you want to speak to anything?
Oh, the committee put in so many hours of work. I want to thank them for doing that. I want to thank the handful of members of the public who came and spoke to us. I want to thank the department heads who went over their individual sections of the charter. And I'm sure if we started it over again now, we would find more things, but I don't want to contemplate that for another 7 years. Thank you all.
Other people would like to speak. Rich John.
I would just like to say thank you to the committee as well. Having not served on it, I'm really appreciative of the time you guys did put in, and can be seen as a thankless task, but thank you, to be clear.
Carol Chalk.
For us old folks whose colonoscopies, mammograms, smoking cessation programs, annual exams, and blood pressure tests are no longer going to be covered with the changes, and whose memories are maybe less than ideal, can you just review for us what were the major points that we had changed? So there was the mental health commissioner that
restore the original language for the duration of the experiment that's going through now, so that didn't change. You want to know the mental health community mental health services board still has its recommendatory role in this version of the charter, and when the 3-year experiment with mental health and public health reaches its conclusion, or before that, there will be a review to see how well it's working and if the charter should be changed further. So that was a change that didn't get made. You want me to talk about changes that did get made?
So it's not a 3-year period. It would be a permanent change.
It's back the way it was. So that was not a change, Carol. The other change we didn't make was to have an appointed sheriff. So I think the things that we didn't do are maybe more interesting than what we did. However, one of the interesting things we did do was spell out in more detail an independent redistricting commission approach to our redistricting of our districts in the county. Is that enough?
Thank you. Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Just to add on to that, to make sure that I'm clear, the language that's there right now has the health advisory board as having an ability to, or final word on who's appointed to that position, but the mental health board has the an ability to just recommend. Is that correct? They have different abilities.
No, at the moment they have, in our charter, the same ability.
Okay.
Which is the way it was, so there wasn't a change.
Got it. Okay, I now understand. Thank you.
Anyone else? Jim Dennis.
Yeah, I have to be very careful with this. I'm very supportive of all the work that all of you put in to do this with the charter. When the issue was changed, or the words were changed in mental health prior to Will bringing it, I was supportive of that. I'm going to support this, but, you know, I have to remind you that you had a mental health board, and I hope there's no one here. If you are here, listen closely. That literally, by their lack of oversight, nearly cost the county a large amount of money. And, you know, it made sense to me that if you're going to hire somebody for a professional job, that it, you know, you do the interview process exactly like we do for every department head in the county. The only one by law, I guess, is the Board of Health, that they literally have appointing control. And it made sense to me that they should be the only one. And I am going to support this, but with a little reservation, because it was clear to me for a couple of years that we were in a very precarious position because of the lack of oversight of the Mental Health Board.
Anyone else? Are we ready to vote? I'm going to call for a roll call, please.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Is there anyone who wishes to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
9 ayes, 5 noes.
The charter revisions are adopted. And I just want to add our thanks to Kathy Covert, who worked so hard on this charter. This isn't the first one she's done that for. And there isn't anyone who knows more about the details of the charter than she does and kept us on track all the time. Julie?
Yes, I wanted to thank Kathy, too. I left her out. And she was the brick who kept us walled in and working. That's a terrible picture. So I would appreciate it if the people who voted no tell me, not during this meeting, but sometime soon, why they voted no. I'm curious. And I know what Jim said, so I understand that he voted yes, in spite of what his reservations were. So thank you.
All right. We're going to move on.
Mike?
Will, I missed you.
Thank you. And I want to thank the committee for doing it and everybody who gave this real thought. I also wanted to acknowledge that at least several members of the Community Mental Health Services Board came here and sat through this process, and I have to say, going to their board meetings, they're taking their jobs very seriously, and I think I would encourage, if you have any questions, if anybody has any questions about what they do and oversight, to talk with them. I think they're really working very hard. So, thank you.
We're very thankful for the efforts they give to our county and to the people that have mental health issues, and we're very thankful that they came here tonight. Rich John.
Just to go on record, I had voted yes to make the change for the Mental Health Services Board, but I did so in the back of my mind, and I want to just put it on the record that if we ended up in a situation where the two boards needed to select a new director, that they would hopefully proceed as a committee of the whole, to avoid a conflict. And that was what was going through my head, but I didn't say it, so I'm saying it. Thank you.
All right, let's move on. We're up to that point where we have a chair's report, and I promised you last time that I would announce committees tonight. I have some prepared remarks. They go a little long. I apologize in advance, but I'd like to speak. 2017, a year of reflection, a year of hope, and a year of action. It is the bicentennial of the creation of Tompkins County. It will be a year to look back at our heritage and our historic diversity. It commenced with the indigenous peoples who lived here and was augmented by wave after wave of those who were brought here or who immigrated here from continents, countries, and regions around the world. They built our towns, villages, city, and all of their infrastructures. They devised the educational, aesthetic, and social services that make us all proud. They farmed, labored, and manufactured. They taught, researched, wrote, enterprised, and invented in ways that grew and continue to grow our economy. In a year of transition and facing unknown challenges, we have hope and we are strong. It is the last year of this legislature's four-year term, and there will be an election in November. Next year, there will be a new beginning, as happens each 4 years. This legislature will pass on to the next one a county that is a little better than it was when we received it. That is our responsibility and our progress. We are a diverse county, full of forward-looking, intelligent, and passionate people. We have recently been through a national election. Many of us in Tompkins County are disappointed and understandably apprehensive about what it means for our nation and our county. We do know, however, that the bitterly divisive rhetoric at the national level does not reflect who we are in Tompkins County and does not reflect the values that we work hard to promote. Take a look at the places in Tompkins County. Take a look at the collage of faces of our people. We are rural and urban. We are every race. We are every religion and no religion. We are young and old. We are straight, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning. We are fully functioning individuals challenged by and overcoming physical and mental disabilities and addictions. We are new people from everywhere in the world. And when new arrivals come to Tompkins County and contribute to our society, we welcome them. We don't build walls to keep people out. We open our hearts and let them in. We are a safe place, and we are part of that hope that has always been our America. We know that everyone deserves a chance. We know, too, there is work to be done. The federal government will again change the health care system. The likelihood that people in Tompkins County will be harmed by unknown partisan changes is very real. We do not know how those changes will affect the Medicaid costs that our county must pay. With sales tax collections plateauing, there is little doubt that we will be forced to raise more money than we want to from the real property tax. At the state level, the first real chance for New York to transfer the cost of mandates from the real property tax to the income tax was unceremoniously vetoed by Governor Cuomo in December. That blocked the state's assumption of the cost of indigent defense over a seven-year period. With new laws increasing the number of people who will qualify for indigent representation, the expense to Tompkins County can only go up. The cost to counties for Medicaid is already huge, and unbelievably, last year there was an effort at the state level to remove the existing Medicaid cost cap and increase charges to counties even more. New York State hypocritically blames local municipalities for the high cost of real property taxes and imposes tax caps that are unrealistic. Sales tax receipts are anemic and may be a symptom of a change in the way consumers spend. But this is Tompkins County, the very best county, and we will face the unknown with resolve. We will not be quiet, and the legislature, as it has done in the past, will not be shy about letting its advice and opinions be known to federal and state officials. Where reasonable and rational action is warranted, we will take it. With all of that, the county's budget, capital, and personnel committee must do important work. We have a budget process that is second to none. We start early in the year, and all legislators are deeply involved in it from start to finish. Recent reports from Albany alert us that there will be even more critical budget issues mandated on us and to which we must respond. I've asked Legislator Jim Dennis to continue as chair of this important committee. He will be joined by legislators Michael Sigler as vice chair and members Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Glenn Morey, and Dan Klein. I've asked legislator Leslie McBean-Claiborne to chair the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee again this year, and Anna Kellis to be the vice chair. That committee also includes serving members of community and staff. 2016 was a busy year for that committee, and 2017 will be as well. We need to continue to follow up on the climate survey of our employees. We need to encourage even more diversity among applicants for civil service and other jobs. We need to provide training to continue to make our workplaces open and welcoming. The committee will review and bring to the legislature reports from the departments on how they are doing implementing county policies to improve diversity. The Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee will change. Last year, the committee had 7 members. This year, it will return to a 5-member format. Because it is a workhorse committee with a heavy workload, the members will be discussing whether it might be needed to be meeting more often than monthly, which it has done in the past. Legislators Martha Robertson as chair and Dooley Kiefer as vice chair will again lead the committee. They will be joined by legislators Carol Chalk, Michael Sigler, and David McKenna as the other members. Important issues are on the committee's plate. An important housing summit was sponsored by the county and held last November. How we increase affordable housing for people who choose to live in Tompkins County will need to be further examined. The report of the Energy and Economic Development Task Force needs to be implemented. The new 3-year Energy Task Force will give us advice on renewable energy strategies to move the county to lower carbon emissions. This will help us comply with our comprehensive plan and energy roadmap to fight climate change. The committee will need to look at all of that while continuing oversight of the normal work of the County Planning Department and related entities such as the Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit and the Tompkins County Area Development and the Soil and Water Conservation District. Our Facilities and Infrastructure Committee oversees a variety of important departments that deliver necessary services to the people of our community. Highway and bridge projects, building maintenance and renovations, and the need to purchase and maintain costly equipment are all part of its work. Our enterprise programs in solid waste and at the airport report to it, and looming important projects there require ongoing attention. This year I've asked legislator David McKenna to continue as chair of the committee. Additionally, legislator Glenn Morey will serve as vice chair, and legislators Michael Sigler, Peter Stein, and Dan Klein will complete the group. Coming off a very busy and sometimes controversial 2016, our Government Operations Committee will continue under the leadership of Dan Klein as chair. Carol Chalk will be the committee's vice chair, with legislators Dooley Kiefer, Richard John, and Will Burbank as the remaining members. The committee oversees several core county departments, including county administration, assessment, board of elections, and public information, to name a few. Its broadband subcommittee will continue under Chair David McKenna. We are still looking to assist residents in obtaining needed broadband service in unserved parts of the county, such as Caroline, Danby, and Newfield. Legislator Anna Kellis will chair the Health and Human Services Committee this year. The committee has charge of those departments which matter so much to the vulnerable of our population, employ the majority of our employees, and administer the greatest part of the county budget. Legislator Leslie McBean-Claiborne will be vice chair, and legislators Peter Stein, Carol Chalk, and Will Burbank will also be serving. The Public Safety Committee will have important work this year. The Sheriff's Department reports to it, as does the Probation Department, the District Attorney, the Assigned Counsel Program, the Department of Emergency Response, and the Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Board. Among other things, the committee will oversee county efforts to provide services for released prisoners reentering our community with the goal of helping to reduce recidivism. A study of police service consolidation will also be pursued. Legislator Richard John will chair the committee this year. Legislator Peter Stein will be vice chair, and the other members will be legislators Anna Kellis, James Dennis, and Martha Robertson. In 2016, a special jail study committee was created in response to the threatened revocation of the New York State Commission of Correction by the New York State Commission of Correction of space variances for housing prisoners at our jail. A jail population study is underway. That committee will also be advising us on programming and building design needs. Legislator Richard John chairs that committee with Legislator Anna Kellis as vice chair. Legislators James Dennis, David McKenna, and Martha Robertson are the other members of that committee. Because of the extended delays in the City of Ithaca's review processes, requiring multiple submissions by the county's preferred developer for the old library site, the Special Old Library Committee's work is not complete and will continue this year. As last year, it will continue to meet on an as-needed basis towards the finalization of the sale of that property. I will continue to chair that committee with legislators Leslie McBean Claiborne as vice chair and legislators Dooley Kiefer, Michael Sigler, and Martha Robertson also serving. Last year, the Special Transportation Committee began a serious review of transportation problems in our county. State highways, our airport, mass transit, and the development of the recreational trail system were examined, to name a few of the issues that were discussed. Much continues to be happening at the federal and state level with respect to transportation and future project funding. The committee will continue, and I will be chairing it, with legislator David McKenna as vice chair and legislators James Dennis, Glenn Morey, and Peter Stein as members. The Tompkins County Industrial Development Agency provides tax incentives to spur economic activity in the county. It is administered by the Tompkins County Area Development Agency and governed by its own board. Four legislators sit on that board. Legislator James Dennis will remain as chair, with legislators Will Burbank, Martha Robertson, and Richard John continuing. I'm recommending that architect Grace Chang be on the board. I understand, too, that Tompkins County Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Jennifer Tavares will be reappointed to her seat on the board by the agency. Whatever work we Tompkins County legislators do pales by comparison to the exemplary job that our wonderful employees do for the people of our county. We owe constant debt of gratitude for the hard work they perform every day and every night. From social services to solid waste, from mental health to public health and youth services, from emergency services to highways, airport, and bridges, from building maintenance to our library and community college, from weights and measures to county administration and all the others. They have our thanks. Without them, our county would be only a name on a wall. As Tompkins County proceeds into its third century, we must all work together. This year, as every year, we will work hard, we will debate, and we will do business. We are the people's team. And if on occasion we should get something wrong, I promise that it will never be because we did not do our very best to get it right. Thank you. Thank you for that. And I don't have any appointments, but I did want to mention that last week, Vice Chair Dan Klein and County Administrator Joe Mariana and I traveled to Syracuse to hear Governor Cuomo's regional state of the state address this year. Instead of delivering one to the legislature, apparently, the governor decided to do six in various regions in the state. The Syracuse one was the closest one and the one to which we were invited. There was not a lot in it about things happening in Tompkins County, overall, except when you look at the state as a whole, there were a lot of Syracuse-centric projects that were highlighted in the speech. I thought it was kind of odd that there was no speech in places like Rochester and particularly Binghamton, but that's the way it was. So we went there and we heard from the governor and heard and watched his PowerPoint, and we were represented at that event. Kathy is reminding me that she has put the first draft committee schedule in our packets here, and she'd like committee chairs to take a look at that with their members and see if this is going to work for them. Anything else, Kathy?
No.
That's basically it. Perhaps tonight, I don't know how soon we're going to get done. We do have an executive session at 8 o'clock. Perhaps if we get done a little earlier, maybe we could do it between that and the executive session. Let's see how it goes. Do I have any questions I could answer? Let's go to other reports. Let's go to our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Michael. I think I'm going to limit my remarks tonight to just one issue, and I've already kind of given you a heads up through an email that I sent earlier that outlines the governor's plan, the latest plan to affect local property taxes. And I just want to go over that because I think that's going to be a consuming item for us this year. So I'm going to tell you what I know about that. The budget is out today. It probably has more details than I had when I sent you the note and when I prepared my notes. But I'm going to tell you what I know about that that proposal. You will hear me also tell you what I think about that proposal. And we'll need to figure out over the coming weeks what we do in response to it. But just to start at the start, this isn't the first time the governor has proposed plans intended to reduce local property taxes. We've been through the tax cap. We've been through the property tax freeze. We've been through the property tax freeze rebate. We've been through the government efficiency plans that are tied to some of those other things. This year's proposal is a variation on those themes, very county-focused. The governor has proposed that that in the next little while, counties develop a government efficiency plan that looks at ways to consolidate, merge, find shared services, find efficiencies that will ultimately be presented to our voters this fall. It has a few elements that are known, at least outlined in his press briefing. The plan will be prepared by, in our case, the county administrator. So that's where it will start, is in my office. The expectation is that through my office, I'm sure in collaboration with the legislature, there would be a great deal of public input. There would be engagements with leadership throughout the community at every level. Ideally, there would be a consensus developed on what a plan might be. Whatever the plan is, it can't be conjecture. It has to demonstrate real, recurring cost savings. There hasn't been a dollar target for those savings set yet. As I said in my note to you, I wouldn't be surprised if it's the old 2% of levy that's been used in some other things before, which in our case would be $1 million a year in recurring savings. That's what I think. It's not what I know. But I'm sure there's going to be some kind of a target on savings that would be considered large enough to bring to the voters. The focus that's been identified is very clear. It's on eliminating or consolidating services where there are duplications between governments. That's where the eye goes in this state plan. And unlike some of the other things that we've done before, we can't look back. There is no look back. It has to be new. So we have to find new things that we can do that will save money and be put on the ballot. The plan needs to be to you, the draft plan, by August 1st. Now, keep in mind, we won't know if this is an obligation until the budget passes. Let's call that April 1st. If that's the case, and if we don't get off to a head start, we have 80 working days to put this plan together in time to give it to you for your consideration. You have 45 days to review the plan. And here it gets, there are some oddities involved in this. At least as outlined in the press briefing, if you don't do anything, the plan that I've given to you goes to the voters for a vote. The plan is voted on not next November, this November of 2017. If the voters don't approve the plan, we're back at it again in the following year for another round in 2018. That's what we know from the outline that was put out by the governor's office a couple of weeks ago. From what I know to what I think, and this is, you know, this is opinion, but it is a little bit of deja vu because we've dealt with some of these things in the past. It's based on a premise that the local governments, I don't know that he singled out counties for this, but local governments are wasteful and inefficient, and we trip all over each other. There's duplication all over the place. All of us would agree that's a false premise. And we've said many times before, if you're a doctor and you make the wrong diagnosis, your proposed cure can be worse than the illness itself. And I think in this case, as has been the case for years, I think there's a misdiagnosis of the problem. I think we would all agree that the problem of high local property taxes in New York State is New York State. That's where a lot of the burden of taxation lies. We can cite ourselves not as the best of the best, but as a case study for what local government has done in this state. Our roster, as all of you know, is down by 6% since it peaked back in 2009 or so. The budget you just approved a few weeks ago is up by less than 1%. I wouldn't consider that extravagant spending. We've been a pioneer in consolidating health benefits, and an assessment a long time ago, we were way ahead of the curve on that. We've done the 911 center. We've done SWAT team. We're looking at law enforcement right now. So in terms of suggesting that local governments like ours are wasteful and inefficient, again, in my opinion, and I think yours too, that's a misdiagnosis. I think that the plan is rushed. I mean, you know how long these things take to get it right. It takes ground laying. It takes consensus. It takes careful attention to details. And to think that within 80 days we'll have a plan to put before you on something as important as what's being talked about now, it feels rushed to me. It feels heavy-handed. When I think of the power given to appointed people like me, I work for you. You don't work for me. Yet in the way this is written, it's in our case, an appointed county administrator that prepares a plan that if you don't like ends up on the ballot anyway. There's something that doesn't feel quite right about that. I don't know either how this engages other municipalities who may be affected by what we propose. Think about things that we could do. Could pretend it's tax collection or something like that. Well, there's a lot of jurisdictions affected by that. At least in this very summary information that we've gotten so far, it's not clear that those jurisdictions would have to give us their consent to make that happen before it goes to the ballot. So I think it feels heavy-handed. That's what I mean. It's both here and it's outside this building that makes it so. It feels burdensome. You know how much time this government spent back when we did the government efficiency plan. Hundreds of hours that went to do that. That might have been better spent doing some other things. So I think this is going to be a tremendous amount of our time and resource to be able to do this. And if we're going to do it, we're going to try to do it well. So it will take a lot of time. So that's the overview of what I think we know and what at least I think so far. I do think we have to revisit some of what we've talked about in the past years where if the state is serious about cutting local property taxes, we have to dust off the mirror. And I think the state needs to understand that a major reason why taxes are so high here, as all of you know, is because of the mandates they impose on other governments, especially counties. I don't know if there's going to be a ballot initiative. Maybe it's time for the voters to take that on, Maybe it's time to ask the voters whether a Medicaid takeover is the right thing to do. But I do think it's going to be a pretty turbulent time. We have to take it seriously. I'm sure there are sanctions if we don't pick it up and run with this. But it is something that's going to dominate a lot of our time over the next several months. So I wanted to make sure that you're briefed early, briefed often. I will certainly engage committees as we figure out how to approach this. Again, I just wanted to brief you on that while it's still early in the process. And I'm sure the budget will tell us more details about how the system will work. That's my report.
All right, questions? Hands are up. I saw Peter first, then Dooley, then Martha.
Do you have any idea what the carrot is and what the stick is in this? What happens if you can't find anything? What's the reward to us as a government for finding something?
To the best of my knowledge, neither has been defined. I think the reward is the satisfaction of knowing that we've saved money, which is something that we realize every time we save money, which is often.
We understand
the sanction,
that, okay.
I don't know what the stick is, Peter. I actually asked NYSAC, what if a government decides they're not going to submit a plan, prepare a plan? What happens then? Don't know. Now, we may know if I went back to the desk now, I think the budget is out. We might be able to dig through there and find out, but right now I don't know the answer to that question.
Huh.
Yep.
I have Dooley next.
This will take the legislature's adoption of it to make it effective, is that right?
The way I read what was distributed, it says if the legislature does nothing, it goes to the voters.
No, I mean the state legislature.
Oh, the state legislature has to approve it, but this is a part of the governor's budget, so it's not a separate piece of legislation that they can vote up or down and it won't have implications elsewhere. Because it's a part of the governor's budget, the folks who know Albany well tell me it's going to be very difficult for the legislature not to approve this.
Let's go to Martha Robertson.
But there's no money attached. What do you mean it's part of his budget? Is there money attached to this?
Well, it's really to Peter's question. I don't know if there's money that they would affect if they don't approve this or not. But it is a part of his budget.
This is, I reread the press statement that you had sent us. There are so many things wrong with their statements in this. It's a purely political document. I want to say, you said it's shouldn't be that a county administrator, an appointed person, comes up with a plan like this. Well, it's the same as if you were a county. We had a county executive. No, there's no difference here. Is he talking about changing the authority for land use control, say, because then we could consolidate all the zoning officers and all the planning boards under county? How would that be, Herb? If he was talking about we can't have a plan to take over things that aren't our responsibilities. Does he want us, maybe he wants us to propose merging with Cortland County or Schuyler County? If you don't merge laterally, then you have to take over responsibilities vertically from somebody else who has those responsibilities. This is a purely political, cynical document. And has NYSAC issued any kind of a statement yet about this? And do you know?
Yeah, early on they did. They've made it clear that the focus is misplaced, that it ought to be on mandate relief as opposed to this. I think I know that, like us, they're waiting for the details to come out in the budget so they know how to react specifically to the plan.
I really hope NYSAC will come back with a unified proposal that every county will say, yes, here's our plan. The state will take over the county share of Medicaid and the county share of indigent defense within 5 years, 6 years, pick your number, and let's put that to a vote. If every county did that in a unified way, then what would we do? It's time. And the legislature is not really happy with him these days. I think it's really time to call a question.
Martha, your question about how he can put it in the budget relates back probably 20 years. There used to be these fights between the governor and the legislature and the two houses of the legislature, and you'd have three men in the room even stronger than it is now. Then I think it was Governor Mario Cuomo, it may have been Governor Kerry, it might even been Pataki, I'm not sure which one, started writing legislation in the budget for all kinds of things. And I believe Marty Luster was our assembly person at that point in time, and the assembly and maybe the Senate too brought a lawsuit against the governor objecting to that, saying he was legislating by doing that. The Court of Appeals ruled that since the legislature gets an up or down vote on the budget, they could always vote the budget down. And so unless the state legislature decides to vote down the budget, then whatever the governor puts into the budget gets approved. In the past, we have spoken to our legislators and say, if you really are with us on mandates, then vote against the budget. And they look at us in disbelief and say, well, we can't shut down the state. Well, this is exactly what happens, and it's why a whole lot of power has shifted from the state of New York, or in the state of New York, from the legislature to the governor. And I think that it now has really gotten out of balance. This is a good example of that. Carol Chalk.
Well, when I first raised my hand, it was to ask if you would lead a contingent of people who may be going to NYSAC to a set of meetings like we have done in the past to tell the state what's wrong with the governor's office, what's wrong with this plan, although I don't know whether the Tompkins County delegation has been effective enough in the past at making our arguments that they won't let us in on the second floor anymore. I'm now curious. I'm not sure that that sounds like it's going to be effective, but it may be effective to lay out some of the kind of questions that Martha just laid out. And I am wondering, I can't go to NYSAC this year, but I am wondering if NYSAC has, people who've looked at the schedule in greater detail or talked to them, have they added sessions since then to, while people are gathered together at the end of January, to talk about how are we going to handle this across counties. Is that happening?
Well, there's not a special session on this because this came up after the sessions were set. There's kind of an open session toward the end of the event where board chairs and county administrators and executives get together and talk about strategy and things like that. I'm sure this is going to be the focus of a lot of discussion with NYSAC. They may come up with a position before the conference and market it at the conference. I think we need to let our local delegation know clearly the concerns that we have. I think talking to the governor's office, it's in his budget, so that's not going to change. The only place it's going to change now is within the legislature, and that ought to be the focus.
Well, I certainly would be all for authorizing our contingent that's going to, first of all, immediately call Steve Aquirio and try to get more discussion actually scheduled and publicized at NYSAC so that people are focused on talking about it and not saying, well, we'll do it later. I'd support having, whatever authorization we need to give all of you to decide to try to get some meetings with people to lobby our legislators. I'm happy to have you do that on our behalf.
Chris John.
I just wanted to note that also on the ballot this year is the question of a constitutional convention. And frankly, I think it's a very timely question for the voters to consider.
Rich, I think you're absolutely right. cynical me, I'm wondering whether this might be confusing the issue by what is being proposed here, the issue of the Constitutional Convention. I don't know. Peter Stein.
Yeah, we've tried before to make that argument about mandates. As long as I've been on this legislature, we've made that argument, and I was going to be honest, I think it doesn't take, I mean, it hasn't worked in the past.
Yes, I know.
But the thing that bothered, I mean, it sounds like what we did a couple of years ago, what we were asked to do a couple of years ago was to find some cases where consolidation would save money, and that's what we did. And that sounded reasonable to me. Consolidation, you know, I'm not against consolidation, and I think there are cases where consolidation saves money, and so that was a sensible thing to do. But what I've heard you say is, I just heard your lips going up and down and nothing said. I mean, we're not talking about consolidation anymore. What exactly are we talking about? Where is this? I mean, if you were to say, well, he wants you to go out and prospect for gold, and maybe if we find a lot of gold, then we'll be able to lower property taxes. True, but I don't think it's going to work. I mean, it doesn't sound to me like it makes any more sense than what I just said. I wouldn't even know where to look to find these things, these magic little buttons that we're supposed to find, that if we push them, suddenly it'll make things cheaper. Am I missing something or what?
I don't think so, and it's not as if we push back on every opportunity for consolidation. We're at the beginning of a police review right now to look to see if there are shared services. It takes a while to work through something. That's what, I think a part of the issue here is it feels very rushed. If you're going to do it well, you probably need more than whatever it is, the 80 working days that we've been given to bring you a plan. So I think we've shown over time we have a willingness to consolidate. We have an ability to do shared services like health benefits. We know how to put these things together, and I'm not sure at all that this is the right environment or the right approach to follow if we're going to be successful in those consolidations.
Peter, one might say that it's not panning out. Anything else, Joe?
That's enough. Thank you.
Let's go to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I plan to ask for an executive session on a personnel matter, which I hope to do, but I know there is another matter, so time is of could be an issue. But if we can't get to it before the 8 o'clock matter, we can do it at the next meeting.
I think we'll make it. We'll see. Let's go to, are there questions for Jonathan? Rick, you're not smiling. Rick Snyder is our director of finance.
Thank you, Mike. I have our year-end sales tax report for you. If you turn to your red folder, there's four pages in there, shows sales tax for the year. And my comments tonight are lifted from two sources. I sent out a note to Joe and to Kevin in the administration office that kind of gives them a short summary of what I'm going to be providing to the legislature. I also send out a letter each quarter to each of the municipalities when they get their sales tax check at the end of the quarter. And that letter is going out right now. And I try to summarize the points as it relates to their municipality. So my comments tonight are lifted a little bit from each of those. So the first report, if you look at the top, it should have December on it, and the second page should have quarterly. We're going to be looking at the December results first and then the quarterly results second. And the county's portion of sales tax distributions for the month of December, just looking at the month, was down 0.84%. If you go to the middle section of your spreadsheet, I always direct you to line 6 and 7 where you can see the county's portion right in the middle of the spreadsheet. It shows 2015 compared to 2016 for the month, and you can see where we've lost about 0.84%. And if you turn to that same location on the next page where it says fourth quarter, down to the midsection, line 6 and 7, you can see that the total county share there shows that the county's portion of sales tax distributions for the fourth quarter compared to last year was down 1.32%. And on both of these spreadsheets, if you move over to the right-hand side, where they have the same year-to-date figures. So the most important thing that Joe and I have been concentrating on the last couple of days is the 2016 year-to-date, which shows that our total year-to-date distributions are $33,198,140, and that compares to $33,385,002 in 2015. So compared to last year's actual, we were down $186,862, or 0.5%. So that's how we finished the year, down about 0.5% compared to last year's actual. Of course, we always have to relate these numbers to what was in our budget for 2016. And as we spoke about the last time I gave this report, I fielded a few questions from the legislators that said, well, how does that compare to that budget estimate of $34,060,000 that's small there but yet ever present in the middle of the spreadsheet? And that $34 million we obviously did not meet, which was in our 2016 budget. We only made the $33,198,000. So that left us with a deficit just for sales tax of $862,126 compared to budget. So once again, compared to last year's actuals, we were only down $186,000, which is not so bad at 0.5%. But compared to what we had in our budget for 2016, we were down $862,000. That means we came in at 97.5% of budget. Instead of garnering the whole 100%, we only achieved 97.5%. And then some of my comments that I shared with the towns and the city, I went over some of the overall numbers with them, but I expressed to the towns and villages that for the towns and villages, the fourth quarter, they decreased 5.31% in the fourth quarter. But the year-to-date distributions for the towns and villages was down just a little bit over 2%. So the towns and villages finished far worse than the county as a whole. The city of Ithaca is the only one that did better compared to last year. The city of Ithaca for the quarter showed an increase of 3.41% for the fourth quarter, and their year-to-date distribution showed an increase of a little bit over 1%. So once again, the towns and villages suffered the most. The county did not do very well with their year-to-date distributions, down a little over 0.5%. Only the city of Ithaca achieved higher sales tax recognition than in 2015. And I believe Kathy sent, and Joe sent to me a couple days, I think she sent to everybody here, a comparison from the state. I believe it just went out today, and it had every county on there and how it did comparing the fourth quarter to fourth quarter and year to date. So you can go down and see Tompkins County was one of, I think it was 18 counties that showed losses. And it's pretty easily spot because they show them in the red. So as you look at the state report or the NYSAC report, I'm not sure who authored it or who sent it, I believe it was a state report, you'll see Tompkins County and it shows up in the red. And I'll take any questions if you have them.
Martha Robertson.
Thanks, Rick. On the outside, the towns and villages, it seems probable, but just checking, is the vast majority of that the commercial developments in the Village of Lansing, the like three malls there?
It very well could be, because when you're looking at the mall and some other businesses, they were quite sizable, some of the exiting businesses.
Okay, I'm just thinking of the commercial areas where we have retail activity around the county. That seems like the bulk. I mean, like, even if you put all the villages together, that wouldn't equal that. Well, it's interesting. And I mean, one of the things I want to look at the planning committee this year, is, you know, bring in TCAD, find some people at Cornell maybe to talk about what's the future of retail. I mean, I looked at your numbers, and while our number is the full year number for the county, I'm not looking at the villages, but for the county, we're still higher than we were in 2013. We've had 2 years where we've seen 2 years in a row, the last 2 years in a row have fallen off, which is really completely anomalous. We haven't had that kind of trend at all. It's always been the opposite. So I don't know what to do about it besides invest in UPS and FedEx. I don't know. I mean, but I'm really interested in trying to understand what's the future of retail.
I think the elephant in the room that everybody's wondering about, especially when we saw such great variety in the months as the year unfolded, great spikes and great valleys, wondering, like, what are they doing? You know, and I'm not so sure. Consumer spending has gone up in such peaks and valleys from month to month. Joe has authored a letter. I believe he shared it with Mike and a couple others. He shared it with me. Don't want to steal his thunder completely. I'll let him describe it. But he's written a letter requesting the state to do an audit on our internet sales, because the internet sales is what comes up at every meeting I'm at with regional treasurers. Internet sales comes up with meetings that you probably go to when you go to NYSAC. And there have been other counties that have asked questions. Please audit our auto sales, because they get concerned. They don't feel they're getting their auto sale tax receipts, because some counties have multiple zip codes, and some towns are divided into two different counties, and so it often goes to the wrong county when a dealership reports. So I've seen many counties request audits just on their auto sales. I think Joe's done a good job in drafting this letter that focuses on an audit on the internet sales. And it's a question that everybody's asking. So, not that I like to ask for audits, because when Joe was requesting an audit, I think, oh, that's going to come back on us, and we're going to have to provide them a lot of information. That's how it is with every audit that you do. But I believe the time is right to begin to get some answers on this fundamental question, because we're asking it, and many other counties are asking it too.
Is that something the comptroller's office would do?
So we've drafted it. It's not. It still needs to be perfected. In talking to Mike about that letter, I was going to ask for an audit of the distribution of internet sales to the counties throughout the state. Mike made a good point that we ought to ask also, once it gets to the counties, are they allocating it appropriately between the cities and the towns and villages? And that may be messy here because of that zip code that spills out over all those boundaries. So I've added that to the draft, and we'll buff it up. If I can just make one note, you're probably going to ask next about what do we have to do in 2017 to hit target. We need to grow a little less than 1% over what we actually received in 2016 to make our 2017 budget targets. We need a little bit of growth next year to hit target.
Carol?
So I'm sitting here trying to do some quick calculations about the long game here. You give us this very nice sheet at the end that has to do with the numbers ever since 1997. So we've got a good 20-year time horizon to look at. And it's interesting to note that there's been an 80s. If I got my quick calculations while I was trying to listen right, which I might not, but it's something like an 83% increase over 20 years in the sales tax receipts. problem is that most of that happened in those first 10 years, not in the second 10 years. Now, what happened in the second 10 years? Well, that was the economy tanking entirely, and it's not a secret that it hasn't bounced back and that people aren't. And it maybe got us all used to not spending and buying as much as we used to, which isn't necessarily a bad thing in all respects. So I just think it would be very helpful to have sort of a pictorial representation of what has this done. So it looks to me like it climbed and then has kind of leveled off, but not entirely, and bounced around a little bit. That doesn't give us a prediction of what will happen, but I don't know. It would help us to understand it in ways that just seeing a table of numbers doesn't quite as clearly, I think. And then, I don't know, maybe we need to start having some discussion about, but what will it mean if we don't see a continued increase of ever greater spending every year that results in sales tax? Just maybe that's not where the world is right now, and how will we deal with it in other ways? If it's a matter of, I may be able to brush off my Excel skills from 8 years ago when I used to take tables like this and be able to select the area, and it's Excel. You click a button somewhere, and they will let you choose. Do you want to show it in a pie chart or a bar graph or a line? Or it's not that hard to do if you remember how to use it. So I volunteer to come help do that.
I'm sure that's on my computer already, and we can get that for you. The mystery to me is, how can we have the strongest economy in New York State outside New York City and have a rate of decline in our sales taxes that is almost leading the state? I can't figure that out. And we've been struggling with that for the last couple of years. So our rate of decline is pretty significant compared to the rest of the state, yet our economy, again, I think is probably the most robust in upstate New York. That's what we're trying to figure out.
Got a bunch of hippies here who don't spend a lot of money.
I just want to say I'd like to bring this to a close because we really should get through the rest of our agenda. Jim, then Peter.
My sense is it really doesn't matter what color the graph is. What I know from what I read in the Wall Street Journal is that brick and mortar spending went down in 2016 at holiday time. Internet sales went up. There was more money spent in the United States of America in this holiday season than ever before. But it was internet money, and brick and mortar money went down. So, I think the smartest thing I've heard here tonight is that we're actually writing a letter to them to talk to them about, where is this internet stuff going and how is it working? Because, frankly, I don't think New York State was ready for it at the level of sales tax distribution people. And, it's like everything else. It's a new thing they have to do, and I think they have to better report those things. So I appreciate very much that this effort is being made to look, ask the people who spread the money around how they're doing it and where's it going and where's it coming from. So,
Peter, last question.
Yeah, I just can't really believe that there's a large mistake. I can understand how there are things on the boundaries that it may not get to the may be credited to the town or to the city, and a mistake is made across that. But when you've got a system like they do, where as part of the buying process you put in your own address as to where it's going, I mean, that's what happens when I buy things on the internet, I just can't possibly understand how a gross error can be made that, the 10% of those or 20% of those simply don't get reported. I mean, unless there's some horrible thing that's going on where people are cheating. But I think it must be being collected. I can't imagine how it isn't.
Being paid.
Rick?
One final comment, and I always like to have a little bit of a silver lining to prove that I'm an optimist, but I guess. But there is one thing, as we sit for our Moody's rating call tomorrow at 11 o'clock, there, believe it or not, they actually see this as a positive trend, not that sales tax goes down, but because Joe's been able to describe in this previous year's budget and going forward how county finances are shifting so that more of our revenue is coming from real estate tax and less is coming from sales tax as a percentage. So now that may or may not mean anything to us, but in Moody's eyes, that's a positive thing because they see as you shift more taxes to the real estate base, that's a fixed or static base.
Makes sense.
And that's a good thing. And as you rely less and less upon sales tax, which is a very elastic tax, that's a good thing, too, that we're relying upon the sales tax less. And so in Moody's eyes, they will see this as a positive variance as we go forward, relying more upon real estate tax than sales taxes.
Thank you, Rick, for that. All right, let's move right along. Let's see what we can get done here. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda tonight? Not seeing any. Let's go to consent agenda. I have some advisory board appointments. Out of the Government Operations Committee, to the Library Board of Trustees, Ingrid Jensen and Nina Miller. To the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality, out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, to the Water Resources Council, we have Michelle Henry, John Negley, Cynthia Brock, Chris Bordlamay, and Lynn Leopold. We have some resolutions. If you want them off the agenda, just say so. Resolution A, out of Government Operations Committee, to amend Resolution Number 2016-6 of January 5, 2016, determination and certification of county clerk's allowance, annual expenses for administering mortgage tax. That's ID 6784. Out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution B, acceptance of snowmobile grant 2016-2017, ID 6788. Do I have a motion? Motion by Glenn, seconded by Anna. Any discussion? All in favor of the consent agenda, please say aye or raise their hand, I guess. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, let's see if we can get the resolutions cleaned up first. Jim, your committee is up first, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, and can we do your resolution?
We can. Resolution number C, request for authorization to extend the additional 1% sales tax rate in Tompkins County, and I would move that.
So second. Seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Discussion. Jim?
One comment. You read the resolution. We've been doing this for 26 years, and we have to do it every other year. As Joe mentioned out loud earlier, it's a three-step process. This is the first step for us, and I am praying that everyone supports this.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Jim, let's come back to reports. Let me get the other two resolutions done here.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson, can you move Resolution E for us?
Yep. Resolution E, document 6790, affirming Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council recommendation to increase the ITCTC staff director's salary. So moved.
Seconded by Carol. Any discussion on that? Ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your... Oops. Short form roll call, I'm told.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous. Okay, let's go back.
D.
Let's go back to Government Operations Committee. Dan, can you do Resolution D for us?
You sure you want to start this before the break?
Yes.
Okay.
We need to be done somewhere around 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Let's see what we can do.
I do have another shorter resolution. Would you like that first?
Yes.
Okay. So last meeting we voted on the meeting schedule for the rest of the year, and it turns out some of those dates are not going to work. So I would like to move to reconsider that resolution from last meeting.
It's been moved. There's a second by Dooley. Motion to reconsider that resolution, Dan says, because of we need to fix some dates. All those in favor of reconsideration, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. So now you can move the revision.
Okay, so the changes in the dates are there were two Wednesday meetings scheduled, and those would be changed to Thursday meetings. So instead of Wednesday, July 5th, it would be Thursday, July 6th. And instead of Wednesday, November 8th, it would be Thursday, November 9th.
Okay, that's been moved. Is there a second for that? Dooley? Dan, you want to explain it?
Yeah.
So it has to do with the crew that does our videotaping and internet streaming. They do the city council meeting as well, which is the first Wednesday of the month. We have to change it off our Tuesday. We thought Wednesday would work, but it turns out it has to be Thursday.
Other questions? Mike.
Well, I don't have a question. I just have a, I guess, a motion.
You want an amendment?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and then I have a question, too. Let me ask the question first. So they do the thing for the city, too? Do they get paid for that?
Yes. Who get paid?
Our guys.
Yes.
Did we ever put that in for...
That may be mistaken. Just a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's not our people, but the station is monopolized by the... Just like we're monopolizing it tonight, the city monopolizes it on its Wednesday meetings. So if we want to be broadcast, we need to move it over to Thursday, and we've done that in the past.
I just thought that'd be a little...
Cervantes is much cooler than we are.
I just thought that'd be a good little consolidation.
Hopefully I got that right. I'm looking at Jim.
Jim's nodding.
I would like to make a motion, which I've not cleared with anybody, so I have no idea if this will have support. So my motion would be to change the Thursday, July 6th to Tuesday, July 11th. We did that with another one. We moved it just a week back. For the simple fact that, I don't know, the week after July, I figure a lot of people are going to have a Monday off. We already have Tuesday off, and we're trying to jam it into a week where I don't really plan to be around, so not that you should make decisions based on me, but I just think, I don't know, it would be great if we could move it back just a week. So.
I have a motion to change the first meeting in an amendment to change the first meeting in July to the Thursday rather than the Tuesday.
No. I would make it not even the Thursday. I would make it July 11th, which is the next Tuesday. So we're keeping it on Tuesday. We're just moving it back a week.
A whole week.
Yeah, it's not like we're doing giant business, I think, in July. But, I mean, I don't see why something couldn't be pushed back a week. We did it somewhere else here.
Is there a second for that?
Yeah, we did it for the NYSAC conference, didn't we?
Second by Glenn Morey. Discussion on the amendment. Martha Robertson.
Now, the NYSAC conference, I think that is just identifying when the NYSAC conference is. That wasn't, because sometimes that's conflicted with our LEDGE meetings. Same as with the February one. We didn't move those. That leaves in July, so we'd have 2 weeks in a row we'd have LEDGE meetings.
Right.
I mean,
you wouldn't have much to talk about.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd ask staff because there are like a lot of things that like get really turned upside down if you do this. So could I ask any staff, Kathy, Joe, anybody, Marcia, what that would do if we had 2 weeks in a row? There are times in the calendar when we'll have 3 weeks between meetings because there's a fifth week or something. But what happens if we put this in the second instead of the first week?
One thing that Jim Blizzard just told me is that July 11th date, the second Tuesday might not work because he believes that the Ithaca School Board can broadcast on that date. So we may have the same problem.
Jim, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, it's just that we go live the first and third Tuesdays of every month, except when it's Election Day or something like that, or 4th of July holiday falls on that day. So we typically alternate with Ithaca school board meetings. They go live on the second and fourth Tuesdays. And if they've already scheduled that in advance, then they have the priority to go live on that that Tuesday. So I don't know if they've scheduled it, but I imagine they have already. So we can find out. I don't know how likely it is for this resolution to pass, or the amendment to pass. But it's possible we may not go live on TV. We would still live stream on the Internet, just not on cable access.
On the amendment, anyone else want to speak?
Did it get a second?
Yes, it did.
Oh, then yes.
Go ahead.
So, I think that this really throws a monkey wrench. We certainly have to ask all of our staff. They count on us meeting so that we can pass things in time for them to apply for grants and pay people, and then our own, clerk's office. The amount of work that we ask them to do a week before our meeting, each of our meetings, that's the day they're putting together the agenda for the next meeting, which takes them, it's a lot of work. And the day that we have our meetings is a lot of work also for them, because there's all kinds of last-minute stuff that, that comes and that they need to copy and get on the agenda, or changes. There's just all kinds of stuff. And if you come in here on those days or call them on those days, it's really clear that they're busy. And then not only that, they still come in at, what do you come in at, 7 in the morning or something, 8 in the morning, and they stay here through our meetings. So to ask them to do that all at the same time just doesn't seem to me to make sense. I went to NYSEC for years and missed legislature meetings because they weren't changed, and it does seem like our practice in the past has been that the public counts on and that our staff counts on is for us to meet approximately every 2 weeks, or as close to it as we can get. So I understand the impulse. I'd love to take the whole week off, but make it easier, but I just think it doesn't really work for either the TV broadcast schedule or for the clerk's office or for all of our other departments that count on us meeting.
Jim Dennis.
Can we call the question?
Motion's been called. Is there a second to call the question? Seconded by Will. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Any opposed? I have two opposed. That carries. So we will proceed to vote on the amendment that Mike Sigler has proposed, which would be to change the schedule to move the first meeting in July from the first Tuesday to the second Tuesday. All those in favor of doing that, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those opposed? Everybody else. That amendment fails. Now we're back to the original motion. We're ready to vote on that. Anna?
No, I'm ready.
Oh, you're ready. Okay. All those in
favor. Okay, Mr. Chair, can you repeat what's that, the original motion again?
Sure. The original motion, we reconsidered the one we did before, and there are 2 days. Instead of meeting the first Tuesday, we'll meet the first Thursday because of the availability of the channel for broadcast.
Thank you.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? One opposed. Thank you. All right, Dan. Let's do the easy one now.
That was a short one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to move Resolution D, Amendment to Rule 4, Order of Business, Privilege of the Floor, Rules of the Tompkins County Legislature, and Functions of Committees.
There's a second. Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion. Van, do you want to talk about this?
I don't have anything more to say about this. Rich was the author of this, or at least the original version. I don't know if he would like to start or if everything's been said that needs to be said already.
Rich?
I think everybody here understands what we're trying to do, whether you support or oppose the motion. For those in the audience or at home, the idea is that we would limit our privilege of the floor to the same amount of time we extend to the public, with the idea of trying to make sure we are moving our agenda along in a little faster manner.
People like to speak? Go ahead, Carol.
Well, I opposed this in committee, and I still oppose it. Rich came to us in committee with a single space, two-page list of changes to the rules, and you'll recall that last month, a resolution came out of committee in response to that, that was going to be a trial period, essentially, of a voluntary reduction in limits on legislators' privilege of the floor to 3 minutes, and we would see how that was going, and we could always do something different. I don't know exactly why that got withdrawn. We never got to talk about it here. And we came back to committee with the same long list of things, out of which I think people felt like they wanted to move the needle just a little bit more. But we still didn't have a lot of time left in our meeting to talk about it in the press of other business, and also because I don't think there was as much appetite for talking about it as some people had hoped. So what came out was this new one. I'd like to move to substitute the original one, which I put on your desks, but with one suggestion about how we implement it. And if I get a second, I will talk more about why and how I would see implementing this.
Is there a second?
I'm not changing it from what came
second
out of committee.
To the motion to substitute. There, Peter Stein is seconding that. Could you explain what this does, Carol?
Okay. So, as came out of committee the first time around, this would be a proposed resolution. It's called Proposed Resolution, approved by the Government Operations Committee on December 7th, 2016. We don't need the withdrawn. Okay. It's an amendment to Rule 4, Order of Business 5, Privilege of the Floor, Rules of the Tompkins County Legislature and Functions of Committees. And essentially, what it does is say legislators are encouraged to limit legislators' privilege of the floor to 3 minutes in order to match the amount of time accorded to members of the public who address the legislature in the public privilege of the floor of the legislative meetings. I think in committee that the concern was, if everybody then takes advantage of the 3 minutes, it adds up to a lot of time. I have a concern that I understand the impulse, and I don't know if you've noticed my attempts to really rein in my privilege of the floor over the last month or so. Hope it's appreciated. I think that for those who are used to talking a lot, it can be hard to remember what a concept of 3 minutes is. So we ask the public to watch the clock. It's right up there, very big numbers. But we didn't really talk in committee, and I would have. It was the next thing I was going to raise my hand to say in committee about let's do the voluntary for a while with the clock on and the bell that goes off, so that people will understand, for those of us who need to, when we're going past 3 minutes. And I'm not suggesting this primarily for those of us who do talk every time at privilege of the floor. We're going to be able to still talk every time and raise our hands and slip it in some other time of the meeting if we need to, like I did on the motion. It's for the people who don't normally raise their hands, but who, when they do, I think should have the ability to talk to us longer than 3 minutes. That time that Glenn Morey talked to us about where he'd come from, what it was like living in Groton. I don't remember all of what you said in great detail, but I got to know you so much better than we had before that. The time that Nathan Shinagawa, for those of you who remember this, talked to us about his grandparents being interned in the Japanese internment camps. That went on a lot longer than 3 minutes, but boy, did we learn something. For Dave McKenna, when he talks to us, he doesn't usually talk in privilege of the floor, but there are some times he's talked to us for longer than 3 minutes about certain experiences that he's had. And so to limit everybody, to punish those who don't normally take 3 minutes or who normally take nothing because some of us are long-winded, it seems to me, without trying something else first, seems to me to be not in the spirit of this legislature. So I would like to propose that either we table this again and try having
you've put a substitute motion on the table.
I did.
So that's what we're talking to.
Yes, I understand that. I would add to this, and I don't think we needed to add it. I'd like to be that it was the same one that had already come out of committee. I think that we could just agree to keep the clock on, but I'll add it to here or take an amendment to do that if people would like me to write something just to say, to add to this. Are encouraged to limit leverage legislators' privilege of the floor and that the clock will run. I would add those words if people would like.
That was 6 minutes and 8 seconds.
Peter?
Well, I'm pretty much in agreement to what Carol says. I know I myself have absolutely no idea what 3 minutes is when I start talking. I start talking, I think about what I'm doing and not what the time is. And I think it's reasonable when we see how many people there are on the legislature that people not talk for more than 3 minutes. Otherwise, it takes a long time for everybody to talk twice and three times 3 minutes. So I'm in agreement to what Carol says, but I think the way that it ought to work is that the clock should ring 3 minutes, and then the person need not stop, but the clock should ring 3 minutes after that, okay? Namely, it ought to ring at 3 minutes and 6 minutes and 9 minutes so that a person is aware of the fact that they're going past what they were originally asked to do. I think that would be the right thing to do, to let the legislators realize how long they are talking, if they in fact talk for a long time. So I would like to see it say that.
Mike Sigler.
Well, as much as this pains me, because my neighbor here goes on. I'm against kind of all of this. You know, you're elected, you're an adult. You should know that at this point in your life, that pithy is usually better. I mean, you have a point to make. You might convince some people, but you're not going to convince people if you're going over, you know, 3 minutes. It's a long time, frankly, 3 minutes. So, I mean, my general feeling is just keep it pithy. You're representing a lot of people. I know sometimes you're going to have a lot to say. One would hope that when you have a lot to say, it's on something really big and not on, you know, I don't know, what's going on in the town. Or I don't know. I can't really think of a good example. But so I'm basically against. I mean, you represent thousands of people. And that with that comes some responsibility, and your responsibility is to speak, and hopefully that you will be able to convey the ideas in less than a PhD treatise. So, thank you.
Leslie?
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question of my colleague who's always keeping it short? I'm not sure I was following what you're saying. The substitute resolution on the floor is asking that it reads legislators are encouraged rather than legislators shall limit. Are you saying you're not in favor of shall encouraged?
I don't think I need a formal...
I'm just asking. I was trying to understand what it is. I got you. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Chair, I just want to take my 3 minutes to say that I'm not one who speaks a lot in this body, and I'll talk to some of my colleagues about their extended time. But I cannot in good conscience support either of these. I probably can support the resolution that's on the floor right now, more around encouraged. Mike, in some respects, is very right that we have thousands of people who we represent, and people look to us to either share things that are happening. You know, there are things that people are extremely passionate about, incidents and things that happen. We're talking about privilege of the floor for legislators. Now, I'm not expecting my colleagues to be reciting their dissertation during privilege of the floor, but I do understand and can respect that there might be a few more things because of the number of people we represent, a number of areas and issues that matter to us that we may want to talk about, not just one issue. And so I cannot, I could probably support the encourage to limit the one that's on the floor right now. And I'd like to, and so I'll speak to that.
If I could speak, I would associate my feelings with exactly what Leslin said. I am not in favor of limiting to 3 minutes the privilege of the floor, because that's what we do for the public. Remember, this is the meeting of the legislators, and as was said, we represent people. The folks that come to speak to us, we allow to speak to us as a courtesy and because we want to hear from people in the community. From up here, I don't think the problem has been people exceeding themselves on privilege of the floor so much as it has been in debate when people go on and on and on sometimes. And when this chair, I do try to be fair, tries to limit the debate, ask people to be short, please not repeat themselves, other kinds of things. I don't think we do a good job with policing ourselves with that, and I don't think that people pay as much respect to the chair, whoever the chair is up here. I happen to be at this seat right now. But I think that folks that are not committee chairs ought to have the opportunity of privilege of the floor to speak. Maybe we ought to run when people are there, we ought to run the clock the other way and start showing how long people are taking rather than run it down from 3 minutes. I don't know. That's another possibility. I could live with the substitute that Carol has proposed, but I would vote against the main motion. Anyone else? Will?
I really, really want to thank Rich for giving thought to our meetings and trying to examine and come forward with a variety of proposals to how we can become more efficient, yet really do the work that we are sent here to do, which is have thoughtful discussions. Hear different points of views and come to an agreement in some reasonable length of time. One of my problems has been, and I agree with you, Mike, that it's not so much necessarily that prison floor is the big time waster. The problem is it's prime real estate for many of us. It is literally at the front of the meeting, and I know being an old guy, get tired as the meeting goes on, and my brain finds it harder to stay engaged. Early on, I got a lot of energy. So I want us to do something. I would my first preference would be self-control, self-reflection, self-awareness, and collective ability, you know, awareness that then when we're speaking, as I am doing right now, we're taking up the everybody's collective time, you know, so try to be pithy. You know, I supported in committee this rule. I would probably be open to considering a trial and just see if we can rein ourselves in. And I know there are other elements of our meeting that need to be, what I would hope, look. So I probably could support this amendment of Carol's.
Is there someone else? Anna?
Well, it's already an amendment, but I don't know how, if this does pass, I liked your idea of having the clock go up. I would really love people to be able to see just in there, like all of us.
You can amend an amendment.
Okay. Then I would love to offer that.
Okay, who else?
I'll second that, Anna's amendment.
We're talking about your substitute resolution now. Dooley?
We're talking about Anna's substitute now or Carol's?
We're talking about Carol's substitute.
Carol's. Okay.
What is Carol's substitute?
Were you making a motion, Anna? Maybe I didn't.
Yes, what I was saying was that I'm making an motion to amend her amendment to adjust it to include your recommendation.
The clock.
Well, you need some wording.
I don't know whether we can do that or not. I think we got to figure it out. But
it takes precedence to if a motion is made and.
You can do it within 3 minutes.
Right? Can we? Okay. Would there be any idea that maybe we ought to send this back to committee?
No, I'll just do this, okay? Legislators are encouraged to limit legislators' privilege of the floor to 3 minutes, and the clock will be run to indicate that time. Period. And take away the part Mike doesn't like.
That's not what Anna has proposed.
No?
I had proposed that the clock run while a person is speaking so that they could see how long they're speaking.
So that's an amendment to the substitute resolution, which is really an amendment.
Has it been seconded?
Yes.
I don't know. Was there a second?
I'll second that.
Seconded by Peter. Okay. So, Dooley, you want to speak to that?
I'll speak against that, too.
It's friendly.
I will speak against running the clock forward. I sit where I can't see the clock. I don't want to have to turn around and speak in that direction. My microphone's here. It doesn't seem sensible to me. I would be willing to have the 3-minute clock go off and startle me if I'm still talking after 3 minutes. But that's enough. I would rather us try something like that before passing a change to our rules, actually. So I'm happy to go with the earlier amendment, but not the present amendment.
I heard someone say that perhaps this amendment by Anna is friendly. Friendly to the mover of the substitute, Carol?
Well, so it would have been, but I'll let it proceed.
All right,
as a vote.
So you folks want to go ahead and vote on these things tonight. Martha?
Is there a language? I still haven't heard this. I guess it's Anna, you're proposing something, but I haven't seen any language.
Just say the language. Read it as it would read.
You're proposing an amendment to the substitute resolution, right?
Yeah, correct. That while individuals are speaking, a clock is running so that they can see the length of the time that they're speaking.
So like that would be a second sentence there?
Correct.
Where is this clock? I can't speak here and watch that.
I understand that. The intention of this is to be educational. If we're all talking about the fact that we want to educate each other, what we're saying, what people are saying is, I don't want to be stopped. I want to be self-regulating.
You need and to raise hands when recognized. Go ahead,
I apologize. totally my bad. The intention is that you would turn around at the conclusion of what you're saying and you would see how long and that would be educational. I think that my concern is that when the clock dings at someone, it is like a 2-second jarring experience, but once that ding happens, you're off and running again. And there's no awareness of that it might be another 3 minutes. And unless we can somehow set this computer to ring every 3 minutes, then I don't see it being educational. And I would like to see something, if we're going to do it, actually indicate. Like, you know, Jim set a time. That couldn't have happened if the clock was running down at 3 minutes. I would love something educational.
Let's, Rich, and then let's proceed to a vote on the amendment to the amendment.
One, I apologize to my colleagues. But I do think this is important, and I said some of these things, so I risk repeating myself and perhaps talking too long. But, Mike, I agree with you completely, pithy, that you want to leave your audience before your audience leaves you. If you want to be an effective legislator, you need to be heard, and talking at great length just doesn't work very well. And, Will, you mentioned the multiplier effect, that to have a legislative meeting, there have to be at least 20 people in the room, at least, which means that for every 3 minutes, you're really taking an hour of time. So it should not be like normal conversation. You should hit your points. I know that trying to institute some sort of rule or control puts an extra burden on us. And my answer to that is, yes, it does. We have the opportunity to speak. There's a concomitant responsibility to do it well, or to try to do it as well as we can. With that said, I think I can support Carol's resolution with the amendment. Let's see how we do. And if it doesn't work, we'll come back to it. I also agree with our chair that the real issue sits here in the debate part of our meetings. But let's do what we can and go at this bit by bit. Ultimately, I think if we want a diverse legislature, we need to have meetings that are reasonable in length to attract as many qualified people as we can, particularly people with young children, families, people who work in the morning, that have to get up and go. So that's all I have to say.
Peter?
Yeah, I think we're arguing too much about details of things. I think we all seem to be agreed that it'd be a good idea that people who are talking have some awareness of how long they've been talking, and whether it's by ringing a bell or having a clock that they can look up at. I think that's the right thing to do. And I can't imagine what's the matter with that. I mean, a person isn't required to sit and look at the clock, so if there were just a clock that just gave the time that a person was talking, have talked, that they could look up, that can't be a bad thing. And I think we should do that.
Can we get to a vote on the amendment?
I haven't spoken.
I guess not. Martha?
I'm in favor of whatever we can possibly do, because I don't think self-discipline seems to be working. I guess if Rich is okay with this modified amendment, then I can vote for it. Otherwise, I would support the original motion.
Carol,
is it too late to accept Anna's amendment to my amendment as friendly?
I think we ought to vote at this point. It's gone into debate. All right, so we're talking about an amendment to the amendment. The first amendment really is the substitute resolution. All in favor?
Could we have the sentence read back?
Kathy.
My understanding that it's going to be a new sentence at the end of the paragraph that will read, while legislators are speaking, the clock will be running so that they can see the length of time they are speaking.
Okay, ready to vote? All those in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. Any opposed? I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 opposed. So that amendment is part of the amendment.
Six.
Dooley.
Dooley's over there.
I'm sorry, Miss Dooley. Dooley walked away from us.
A
Dooley's a no, too, right? All right. I didn't catch you. I missed you. So it's 9-6. So that passes. Now we're on the
8-6.
We're getting tired.
14, aren't we? All right. Now we're to the substitute, which is the amendment with that change in language about the clock. All those in, let's see, we've got to vote on the amendment, then that will become the main motion, and we'll have to vote again. All those in favor of the substitute, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Peter.
Who's five?
Oh, I think you didn't see Dave's hand
before. I didn't?
On the yes.
All right, what do we got?
I need the no's again.
All right, let's see the no's. Those voting no, please raise your hand high. Dooley, Mike, Jim, Glenn.
Four.
So that is, it's 10-4. That passes, so the substitute with the language about the clock is now the main motion. We're going to proceed to a vote. Now, Kathy reminds me that in order to change a rule, it requires 10 affirmative votes.
I would like to ask for the roll call, please.
Sure. Martha?
And I don't know if it's possible. Can you do that with the clock?
I don't know.
If not, we'll
I don't know.
Back.
I imagine there's something that can be worked out.
Please read the roll.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chuck?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
No.
Mrs. McBean-Clairborn?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Mr. Lane?
No. Anyone want to change his or her vote? Please read the results.
7 ayes, 7 noes.
The motion fails.
So the main motion is back on the floor?
No, that was the main motion.
It's over.
Carol Chalk.
Can I ask whether we need a whole rule change to just declare that we're going to try running the clock during privilege of the floor for a while?
No, you could make a motion to say you'd like to have us try it.
Do people, maybe I'll wait. Are people tired of this now? Or?
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
All right, now we had a time check. We had planned to do an executive session. Jonathan has offered to postpone his executive session until next time. We were scheduled to start at 8. We haven't had our break yet. We haven't had reports from committees. What would you like to do? Do you want to adjourn to executive session and not come back? Do you want to adjourn to executive session, which could be lengthy, and then come back again? We'll have to hold staff over if we do that. What's the pleasure of the group? Can we get along without reports tonight? Martha?
I would suggest we do that. This is the month's best month of all to do that, where we haven't really had committee meetings.
Limited to 3 minutes.
All right, so let's do that. We do have to do the minutes. Oh, Martha, can you mention the information item for that so it gets on the
sure.
Advice on the record?
Packet page, your packet page 9-13 has to do with the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program.
Folks, can we listen, please?
This is an information item only. It's to make sure that the public understands that there's a request for an exception to conflict of interest guidelines. There's a Tompkins County employee who is eligible for the home ownership program that's run It's CDBG funds. It's run through Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services. She's eligible for the mortgage support. And the only reason there's any issue is that she's a Department of Social Services employee. So this was run through Jonathan advised on this, and the staff checked in with state staff as well. And as long as we are disclosing this, then the person can participate in the program. So there's a lot of information there. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Let's do the minutes. January 3rd. Is there a motion? Motion by Rich, seconded by Leslin. Discussion on the minutes? Martha?
Back at page 15, I'm Ms. Robertson, not Mr. Robertson, on the women's proclamation of all things.
No way.
All right. Sorry, we'll make that correction. With that correction, all in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Any opposed? One opposed. Jim, are you opposed?
No, I'm not.
One opposed. All right. I need a motion to go into executive session to discuss a personnel issue regarding a particular person. We will have the executive session. We will come out and adjourn, and it's not anticipated that we will take any action at that point. We'll just adjourn. So we'll take about 10 minutes so we can get shut down and folks can have a break. Motion for the executive session from Leslin, seconded by Glenn. All in favor, executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous.